Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. I was away for a bit because, well, got banned on Twitter, and at the same time I had to do a lot of moving. Moving is always a fun activity, you know, except it isn't, and I don't own a car, so extra interesting to move apartments. In the meantime, by the way, in the interview that I was on with Daniele Bolelli has come out on the Drunken Taoist podcast, which is great, so you can just go and listen to that one. I really hope you'll enjoy it. It was recorded a while ago, as you can remember. And yeah, I had to re-listen to that one myself to understand what was going on there. And I have to say, I'm actually pretty decent. Don't feel even bad about that one. And also, during this week, during which I was banned on Twitter, so I couldn't really share that one, apparently, I'm being listened to in West Point, so by someone there. So, hi, folks from West Point, because I noticed that I was quoted in an article of theirs. Well, I was mentioned that about the book, you know, I Live, I Fight, I Win, the weird Russian instruction manual, and they mentioned my show on one of their articles on their site. I was sent a screenshot of that, and I was sent a link to the article, and I was, well, felt really awesome, but a bit weird. However, there's a bit of catch-up to do. For starters, well, everyone's been asking me to comment on Solidar. By the way, Solidar literally translates to the gift of salt. Because, again, Bakhmut, it's near Bakhmut, and the region is well-known and was established to be salt mines. So there's, like, this small town called Solidar next to it. There's a place literally called Salt on the south of it. So it's all salt-related. And that's the only area of the front line that is active currently. Well, the interesting part is that the Russian side announced that they had taken it multiple times until they finally did. Ukrainian side is still sort of-ish saying that, well, it's not fully captured, but it is, with massive losses for the Russian side. But if you look at the map, then there's like this tiny little sliver of the whole administrative district, which is still disputed. But the interesting part is that, of course, this came under, well, this tiny little success of the Russian side came after a bloody affair. It wasn't easy for them. And, well, once again, after that, and after the bombings that followed, including the one in Dnipro, where an apartment building, 9th floor one, was hit, and many, many civilians died once again, and saw some truly shocking scenes from that, but I'll get to that reaction later. Finally, there's been an actual movement of the Western politicians to give heavy equipment to Ukraine, such as tanks and BMPs. Okay, BMPs is it's BMP in Russian. It's basically infantry assault vehicle, but I'm just so used to reading in Russian, that's why I use BMPs. But whenever I mention those, know that I'm talking about infantry assault vehicles. Just a bit of explaining. I think I mentioned that in some earlier episode, but just to be sure, if IFVs remind me of some stuff that they put you in hospitals or something like that, so I just call them BMPs by inertia. Sorry about that one. Anyway, the fact about Solidar, that was the really interesting part, is that this really portrayed the whole inner clash of Russia that I've been talking about for a long time already. Remember, I've been talking about the Kadyrovtsi and Prigozhin's, their united bloc conflict with Shoigu and the Ministry of Defense. Well, that came into the forefront because of how this was portrayed. At the beginning, we had Wagner Group with Prigozhin publicly reporting and announcing to Putin that it was all Wagner Group that had taken Solidar and that they did it and all that stuff. And that came after they had basically publicly posted videos, because sure, Wagner Group posts videos, but basically Prigozhin's PR service, because Prigozhin also runs troll farms, which calmed me down and got me banned. So, you know, Prigozhin, I think Mr. Prigozhin has noticed my activities online, because, yeah, when I say Russian trolls, I mean Prigozhin's troll farms. So, hi, folks from Petersburg. You know, you're a nice company, just saying. But yeah, he posted this video openly and brazenly, and people were stunned. But then came the Russian Ministry of Defense's announcement that didn't even mention Wagner Group. And at the same time, there was this conflict on public sphere because Ministry of Defense sort of downplayed Wagner Group's announcements, and then pro-Wagner Group Telegram channels kept posting about how it's unfair to deny them this glory of war or something. But what is clear, certainly, is that there's a massive conflict because Prigozhin's now trying to prove that he's useful to Putin. Because all of these statements, you know, everything that Minister of Defense says or Prigozhin says himself, it's for a single person audience, really. Nothing that they state is, you know, is meant for anyone outside there. They just want to prove Putin, who is still being totally misled by everything and being lied to and manipulated on. They just want to prove Putin their usefulness. And now it's going to go crazy and a bit haywire since, well, Suravikin, the General Armageddon, he's kind of sidelined because apparently Putin is not very happy with his achievements. And now the previous chief of staff, kind of the chief of the General HQ, I think it's chief of staff, he's been pushed on the Gerasimov. That guy now is in charge of the whole special military operation, as they call it. Now, this is the fourth general the Russian side has appointed to command the whole affair. And that's including the fact that Suravikin has been, as far as we now know, twice in charge of this. So it's just a weird situation where they switch around. But Gerasimov is interesting since, as he was the chief of HQs, like general chief of the HQ, just, you know, the commander of the HQ staff while Suravikin was there. I really don't know the NATO analog of this. I think it's kind of the chief of staff of forces, the one that commands the HQ part. So he was blamed about all the lack of equipment and all the lack of training, and he's very dangerous, specifically to Wagner Group, because, well, Wagner Group also just made a video recently, which they posted on YouTube, publicly calling him a shithead and stating that they can't move onwards and they can't fight and that he's a piece of trash since he doesn't provide enough support and material for the people. And everyone on the pro-Russian side of the war, on all the Telegram channels, including Igor Girkin, now seem to think that Gerasimov is there not to win the war, but to serve as proxy of Shoigu, because Sergei Shoigu, the reindeer herder or the cardboard general, as Igor Girkin calls him, yeah, that he's finally getting tired of being smacked down by Wagner Group and Prigozhin, and this is sort of a way to strike back. So this is why Prigozhin was pushing so hard about him taking Soledar, and this is why there's this conflict of who actually did what, because the final conciliatory, you know, after this mess had happened and went on for some time, conciliatory message from the Ministry of Defense basically portrayed that the Russian army did everything and that the Wagner Group just stormed in and did the final assault on the fortified positions. But that's kind of weird since Wagner Group is supposed to be assault infantry, although they have tanks and air force and all that stuff. That also sort of mocks their participation. Meanwhile, Wagner Group has already, you know, started out giving medals to people for taking of Soledar. And this is interesting since, one, well, giving medals to Wagner Group people is nice because then you can, like, recognize them after the war, and as they are an illegal military formation, since in Russia private warfare companies are not allowed, that'll be, you know, very easy to be sort of, you know, they'll be easy to recognize after the war. And secondly, which also caused a furor amongst the pro-Russian Ministry of Defense Zed channels, the whole propaganda stuff that I live amongst, and that causes me migraines lately since I just don't sleep, but it is what it is. Someone has to do these shows. And yeah, these are literally for the conquest, for the taking of Soledar. But if you remember that Soledar is in the Luhansk district, right, and according, well, to these pro-war Russian side guys who support the Ministry of Defense, technically it's Russian territory according to the fake referendum things. The Shamarenda, as I remember, that was on the Twitter spaces there. So they go all out and question Prigozhin's true motives because, hey, that's technically Russian land. Why are we taking it? Shouldn't it be liberation of Soledar? So that's even more conflict going on there. It's kind of the seeds of the conflict have been sown, and currently most analysts agree that it's upon Putin to decide whether or not Gerasimov gets the rein in Wagner Group or not, because apparently Prigozhin has shown some more, you know, political ambition, which would be unhealthy for someone in his position. But it's all interesting because the conflict still carries on amidst rumors of the second wave of mobilization. Since, well, although Girkin and guys who actually have some military expertise, although they are wicked war criminals, they state that, and I agree with them, that proactive, like protracted war will only just cause Russia to lose more people, and that would cause internal squabbles inside Russia, and I tend to agree with them. Meanwhile, the guys on Putin's side of the mainstream kind of Ministry of Defense side, they seem to think that they want to prolong this war as long as possible until the West decides to, you know, get tired of Ukraine and forget about Ukraine, and then Russia can just sweep over and grab everything because Ukraine is dependent on Western aid. Now, well, in this case, I kind of understand why Prigozhin is sort of angry at me, since I'm the kind of person that directly, you know, puts a wrench into their plans, since I don't intend to stop reminding everyone that Ukraine needs your help and that we must support Ukraine. And, well, if I'm being listened to West Point, which apparently I am, then I'm pretty sure that I won't allow even guys up there in the military and to forget that this whole thing is a problem. So, tough luck, Mr. Putin. I think Mr. Girkin is a bit more right on that one, but thankfully Girkin does not listen to my shows, which is excellent. Talking about which, I also tried to get Girkin on my show, but he sent a nice little response in his latest two-hour thing, because I apparently wasn't the only one who has tried to contact him, but he just publicly stated that he will not be giving interviews to anyone, to any journalist from any country that, you know, supports sanctions against Russia. So, you know, tough luck for me. I sincerely hope that when the war ends and that he's finally sent to The Hague to serve his life sentence there, I would really, really enjoy getting an interview with him over there. I mean, it is allowed, I hope, and, you know, that could be nice. But in the meantime, yeah, this whole Soledad thing, the capture is less important because that town has, like, first of all, it's no longer a town, it's a moonscape. It's destroyed almost completely. Secondly, yeah, that's the only area in the front that's moving onwards, and I'm really happy that the heavy equipment that's at least promised to Ukraine, well, yeah, the mobilized people, even though we had like a lot of losses of them, they're not very effective. What the mobilized can do and what they're doing from the Russian side is that they're stalling everything and making it difficult for Ukraine to attack. So everywhere else, the front lines are very stagnant except this one incident, which I hope, well, you know, is going to be stopped and Ukraine's going to go back in the counteroffensive. And again, we'll, in response to all this situation, we had counterattacks and missile airstrikes and all that stuff. So once again, if Putin feels like, you know, he feels offended or something, then he bombs civilians. Nothing surprising there. In other news, by the way, this is tied into this, is the fact that I listened to some commentary from the Russian liberal journalists, and they pointed out a thing about Russian mentality and how West treats it that I hadn't even thought about, and I feel ashamed of it since I'm supposed to be telling you all this stuff. But I have a feeling that, well, I spoke previously on the show about how West tends to think that there are two Russias, right? But I understood that, yeah, you know, there was a time when I was doing, as part of my monthly Russian politics segment, all the weird news that, you know, Zhirinovsky and all these people were saying about Russia. And currently in Russian politics, you have to be super mega loyal and show the crazy stuff. You have to pretend to be a complete utter super pro-war fool to, you know, not lose your properties since everyone's been falling out of the window. So over here, we understand that Dmitry Medvedev, who at one point was sort of a competitor to Putin and was, you know, during his time as president, although he was Putin's puppet, was trying to move his own things, he has to be super loyal, which is why he's gone full alcoholism mode and now he's spewing out all sorts of nonsense. Like yesterday, he basically came out with the message that the Japanese prime minister should seppuku himself for, you know, defense talks with the United States. And he just portrays all this in very interesting light. But all these Russian politicians and Gosduma and everywhere, you know, they're not actively, and this also makes the West worried about nukes. And I always thought, why are you so worried? Because apparently Western politicians, when they look at the sayings of Dmitry Medvedev or Gosduma people, all that stuff, they take that seriously in a way. And they look at the statements of people like Dmitry Medvedev and people in Gosduma, and they go, well, wow, that's an actual official statement. I mean, that's a person in an important position and all that whatnot. And then they understand that, well, there's no point of talking with Russia if this is all, like, if they're all so crazy. And that's pretty good, because that's kind of a, you know, that's kind of a backup, because, you know, that reinforces my idea that it's really not worth to make deals with Russia, since they're going to backstab you anyways. But for the wrong reasons, since I know, and a lot of people on this side of the eastern border understand that why these politicians are saying all this is not because they want to say anything to the United States or Europe. They've been saying this whole stuff for years. What they want to do is portray themselves as super loyal to Putin, because Putin rewards only loyalty, okay? So they just have to show that they are not a threat, that they're completely loyal, that they, you know, won't have a political career without Putin. This is a modern version of prostrating yourself before the ruler. That is what they're doing. They're showing loyalty with this, and no one in Russia takes them seriously. Well, at least not the smart people. And even like Igor Girkin, even he mocks Dmitry Medvedev, and he's a super pro-war guy. So it's kind of like interesting when the West finally has started actually, you know, looking at these fools. And that's the biggest issue, because, you know, before the war started and before all this happened, they could, you know, yell at the West and be idiots and not be afraid that the guys whom they're offending and calling to be nuked, because there were people who were just yelling that Russia should just randomly nuke a spot in Arizona in the desert just to show that they can, to intimidate the United States and all that whatnot, right? But now they're being listened to, and they can't do otherwise. See, they have to show the loyalty, they have to prostrate themselves before the ruler, or they'll get accidentally stepped too close to the window. But it also hurts Russia, really. It hurts Russia, because then on the public sphere we have on record stupid statements. So that's weird. But yeah, another thing that's happening there. But on a more interesting note, which also is a thing that happened on January 14th, is another thing that kind of, you know, if you listen to Daniele Bolelli's show, which I was on, another story that goes into the crazy land. And I like those. It's meanwhile in Russia studies, except now in the war. Oh boy. From Medusa. This is just from Medusa, because they translated this stuff to English and it's amazing. Quote, three people have been killed and 16 wounded, according to the latest tally, by ammunition detonating at a Russian base at Tonyankoye farm in Korochansky district of the Belgorod region. Interfax reports, citing emergency services, that an additional 8 people are missing. According to online newspaper MASH, the incident took place at 4:50 a.m. Moscow time on January 14th. The explosion occurred in a former cultural center where Russian troops were stationed. Emergency services told Interfax that a sergeant, other sources say he's a senior sergeant, accidentally detonated a hand grenade in the building's sleeping quarters, which then caused the platoon's ammunition to explode and started the fire. The Telegram channel 112 writes that after the grenade exploded inside the building, quote, ammunition located in the weapons storage room detonated. The fire, according to 112, by the way, is European 9/11, like, you know, that or what was it, 911? 911, I suppose, is the United States emergency number. European one is 112, just so you know. That's why it's called 112. The fire, according to 112, grew to 450 square meters, around 4,800 square feet. The soldier who caused the explosion survived and has been hospitalized. 15 people were evacuated from neighboring buildings, though no local residents were injured. According to online publication, Baza claims that the service member from the Sverdlovsk region set off the explosion. The sergeant guy. And that although all of those injured and killed in the explosion were, draftees, the guys who were mobilized. Buzzard writes, and this is the best part of this whole study, because I love to grab these things. I enjoy them so much. According to preliminary information, the service member grabbed an RGD-5 grenade to gain authority in front of his subordinates. According to Telegram channel 112, a criminal case has been opened, though it is not clear what the charges are. The Ren Television Network reported that the Tonyinkoi farm has been cordoned off and journalists were not allowed in the area. Well now, you have to show some authority to the scumbags that are mobilized and don't know anything, right? Right? This is how armies work. You throw grenades at people to show them who's boss, at your own guys that explode ammunition shortages. Of course you do. I mean, that was literally what was written in that book, you know, I live, I fight, I win. Amazing, isn't it? It's just scary that if you look at this army and how they're running their businesses, that if you remember that they also have nukes, and I wouldn't be surprised if I found out that at least one or two of them have just randomly been stolen or exploded or something. But yeah, I'll keep you up to date on everything, and thank you for listening, and thanks Prigozhin guys, thanks West Point, thanks everyone. Yeah, on the 21st, we're recording with two of my friends. One of them is the Secret Police Podcast. Nice, really guy. I highly recommend it. He's been advertised on my show. And of course, History Impossible making a return. We're doing a three-way thing about why, about Putin's supporters in the United States and what Putin's supporters in Russia think about the United States, to kind of show the paradox, which I think is pretty weird, that a lot of Americans, both far right and far left, tend to support Putin and his war. Meanwhile, people in Russia just mock them, and I'll try to understand this stuff, and we'll also talk about racism inside Russia, and all that, you know, interesting stuff. I hope it's going to be great. But yeah, in the meantime, we're going to be working on some more news, and of course, well, if you want to support the show, please become our patron on patreon.com/theeasternborder. And if you are up for a one-time donation, since we are still organizing to go to Ukraine, I can get back to that part of business. Well, just go to theeasternborder.lv. You can always listen to the show without ads there, by the way, and just click the donate button. That'd be super nice of you. And I'm super, super thankful, since because of you guys, I've been able to move to my new apartment, which is great. I hope the sound is actually a bit better, since I'm now in the special tiny studio room, and I'm trying to, you know, improve the sound quality as well. Wouldn't be able to do all this without you, and truly, truly appreciate all of you. Спасибо, товарищи. That is, thank you, comrades, just, you know, to explain this. And of course, до свидания, товарищи, as usual. And remember, happiness is mandatory.